Hey everyone, welcome in to another daily editorial here on the KE Report, focusing a bit more on the technicals now as we are chatting with Steve Penny, publisher at the Silver Chartist Report. Steve, as always, has shared a number of charts with us that we will post below. A lot focused on resources. We're going to start precious metals. Looking at this gold chart, it's a weekly chart dating back to about 2018. We're seeing a uptrend line from March 2020, also a 2018 uptrend line, that March 2020 uptrend line, bit steeper, bit more bullish. However, it is being tested now. Again, it's been tested already three times from when the start of that uptrend line. We're also seeing a bit of a downtrend in more of a shorter term fashion, creating a kind of an odd shaped triangle here. But fact of the matter is, we all know pretty much every sector has struggled in the last about 6 months, gold included, but gold is still holding that March 2020 uptrend line. Steve, what do you think here? Do you think this uptrend line holds? How much weight are you putting in that short-term downtrend? How do you view this chart then, bullish or bearish?
Well, I think it looks pretty constructive here. Gold has remained in an uptrend. I remember speaking with you guys back around March 8th when gold was up at 2078 or near there and saying, hey, we're due for a pullback, but as long as we make a higher low, we're still in an uptrend. And the most recent low was 1780, and the low on this move now is 1785. So far, we've made a higher low, so we are in an uptrend. Gold is still hovering right around that 200-day moving average as well, which is rising. So gold looks somewhat constructive here, you know, considering all things considered, looking at how everything else has just been pummeled. You know, gold has held up pretty well. And I think my baseline assumption is that this support will hold. But I deal in probabilities, not predictions. So could this support fail? Absolutely. I think it's more likely to hold. And if support does fail, you've got major support down at 1675. I think that's a lower probability outcome, but it's something I am prepared for if that does happen.
Well, Steve, on this other gold chart that you sent us, and it shows the 200-day moving average, which is getting pretty close to that trend line, it's really hugging that 200-day moving average, price kind of flip-flopping on either side of it. I know that you've done some pieces before for your subscribers discussing the importance of the 200-day moving average. Would you mind unpacking why that's such a key moving average to follow across all markets and how many different investors and institutional investors follow that signal?
Sure, and I'll preface by saying there's no one magic indicator. You know, I like to pull a handful of indicators together, and when you get more things kind of saying the same, giving the same indications, the more valid, you know, an indicator is. But the 200-day moving average, I think, is probably the most useful indicator you can put on a chart, simply because it's used by so many institutions and institutional trading algorithms. You know, billionaires like Paul Tudor Jones, they just don't trade stocks below a declining 200-day moving average. So it's a really important indicator for these technical algorithms. So anyway, gold is a few pennies, like it's like a dollar below its 200-day moving average. So if we can close above that 200-day moving average, which is rising, you know, that would be somewhat encouraging. And speaking of that triangle pattern, that pattern looks like it's going to resolve no later than about the second week of July. So we should have some clarity by then, if not sooner, probably sooner, but you know, no later than second week of July.
So what do you see in this 200-day moving average in terms of trend? It does look like it's rising, but also looks like it's kind of flattened out in the last couple weeks here. Again, it's kind of a tough moving average because price has pretty much followed that for the last couple months. So is the 200-day moving average giving you any indication of whether we're going to get a pop or a drop?
Not really. I mean, you want to see price above a rising 200-day moving average. So that's why it's key that we get that. You know, we're just a little bit below that right now. But it's not like a perfect timing tool or forecasting tool or anything. It's just one of the tools in the toolbox. And the simplest definition of an uptrend is when price is above a rising 200-day. So let's see if we can maintain that.
Okay. Well, we'll keep our eyes on gold and see how that resolves, hopefully by the second week of July on that triangle. Let's shift over to silver. Steve, you are the silver chartist. And when I look at the silver chart, it's a little messy. It's kind of been a channeling sideways. It's really been stuck in that channel between 22 to 28 for a while, but it's recently broke to a lower level, that 2042 you highlight. What's your takeaway from the silver chart?
Yeah, so whenever I look at a chart, the first thing I look at and ask myself is there a clear trend? Are we in an uptrend or a downtrend? And when I look at this silver chart, we are not. There's no trend at all. It just grinded straight sideways between 20 and 30 for the last 2 years. So there is no trend. Then the next thing I look for is there some kind of clear pattern that can give you some kind of inclination on what direction it's going to break next. And we don't have that either in silver. There's really no clear pattern. So we just have horizontal support and resistance levels. And you can, by identifying those, you can make if-then statements. So if then, 2042 is initial support. If 2042 were to fail, then the path of least resistance becomes 1970. And below there, you have 1850 and 1890. If 2042 holds, the next resistance to watch, the big one, would be 2750 and 2850, and then, of course, $30. So there's really not much to say about the silver chart other than it's oversold, it's undervalued, and I think if you're a value investor, you know, there's a lot of opportunities here.
Any weight that you're putting in on that most recent weekly or monthly close? And to that point, that 2042 level, that actually was a break below that general trend or pattern that silver was in.
It was.
Because silver hadn't dropped below that $21 level.
Yeah, that was a new low. So it was important that we reclaimed that $21.50 to $22 support. And here we are at $21.50. So that's why it's hard to say. I mean, silver could really go either direction here. So I think more important than having, you know, predicting the next short-term outcome is having a strategy to deal with a variety of different outcomes. So this is where strategy is important. You know, are you someone who likes to buy pullbacks to support? Are you someone who likes to wait for technical reversals? Do you dollar cost average? There's no right or wrong, but the important thing here is to have a plan and then execute your plan regardless of what happens.
Well, Steve, one more of the precious metals that we should talk about, and that is platinum. Still in the precious metal suite, but you've been noting on our show that platinum has really been oversold, not just compared to the other base metals and commodities, but also to the precious metals, to gold and silver. You included a platinum gold ratio chart. Walk us through why you see a little glimpse of hope on this.
Well, if you're a contrarian, you're probably going to be drawn to platinum because this is a historic anomaly to see platinum trading at such a historic undervaluation relative to other metals, to include gold and silver. It's rare for platinum to be less than the price of gold, but not only is it less than the price of gold, it's half. It's about half the price of gold. And we see a pattern forming on this ratio, a triangle pattern, that if it breaks up and out of that, platinum could outperform gold by a wide margin. I view platinum as much more speculative than gold and silver, but it's really the only metal that I can see outperforming silver over the next handful of years. It has that potential. I'm not predicting that it will, but it has that potential, and therefore it warrants some exposure in my portfolio.
So we can all see that breakout in this ratio from the tail end of 2020 when it got moving through the very early stages of 2021. Very interesting when you break down both of these charts because platinum started rising later part, really started rising later part of 2020. Gold really started dropping in the second half of 2020. Platinum kept going in the beginning of 2021. Gold kept dropping at the beginning of 2021. Why are these two precious metals so inversely correlated around that time? Any thoughts there?
Well, I mean, the simple answer is platinum is much more of an industrial metal, and it's primarily an industrial metal. But, you know, I think with platinum, it's so unique because a lot of the bearish factors, which are valid, but I think they're not only priced in, but more than fully priced in. And then a lot of the potential bullish catalysts are almost being ignored. Things like hydrogen fuel cell technology, substitution for palladium, potential investment demand. So I feel like platinum is just so overlooked right now. And, you know, when it goes, it's got the potential to really, you know, when platinum runs, it really runs fast. So I think right now is a good time to consider adding some. The challenge with platinum is finding quality mining stocks to invest in that are pure play platinum miners and that are, you know, actually quality companies. So personally, I prefer the physical, but there's a handful of companies to consider as well.
Well, Steve, yeah, we'll keep following along with platinum as a contrarian play, but as a hybrid precious metal and industrial metal. Corey and I did ask you to cover one other, probably the king of the base metals, and that is copper. Dr. Copper is usually told to take the temperature of growth in the markets, and we saw a pretty nice move in copper really over the last year or so, where it just kept breaking higher and higher and finally made an all-time high just this year, over $5. But it has pulled back by about 20%, down closer to the $4 area. Well, what do you make of copper on this chart? Is it in risk of breaking down? Was that a double top that we saw? Or is this a support level that you think will hold and we'll see a rebound higher?
Yeah, copper reminds me a lot of silver as far as the chart, because it's just in this sideways grind between $4 on the low end and about $5 on the high end. And here we are hugging this lower rail of support right around $4 right now. And this is a much needed consolidation. Copper got historically technically stretched. It was way overbought back in May of 2021, and I was urging some caution there. So it was due for some consolidation. So from a big picture perspective, this is actually healthy. I like to say fundamentals tell me what to buy, technicals tell me when to buy. And the fundamentals for copper are extremely bullish. I mean, we're headed for a structural supply deficit for years to come. The world's going to need a lot more copper, and the price is going to have to go up to incentivize that new production. But from a purely technical perspective, you wouldn't want to see this $4 support fail, as that would, you know, that could open up the door down towards support around $3, which would be a pretty sharp drop. I don't think that's going to happen. I think support is likely to hold here, but we'll have to watch that $4 support closely.
So does that relate at all to recession outlooks? Because Dr. Copper is a barometer for inflation, for general economic activity. Do you think if copper breaks below $4, that means a recession's here? Or on the flip side, if it does hold and rebounds, maybe we don't have that recession?
Well, my outlook is for stagflation. And, you know, if you go back to the 1980s, you know, commodities did well, even though we were in a contracting economy. So I think that's very likely to repeat, where we have inflation and recession at the same time. And I think copper will do quite well in that environment. And especially, you know, what's different now, too, is you've got all these government spending programs for infrastructure and all these kind of things that I think, you know, if we do have a recession, the government's probably going to spend more money on infrastructure and things like that, which would be, you know, a tailwind for copper. It's not the primary investment thesis, but it's something to consider.
Well, we will keep our eyes peeled for whether Dr. Copper puts on his dancing shoes and shows us that there's more life to the economy than we think, or if Dr. Copper gets sick with the flu and falls apart with the rest of the economy. So we'll keep our tabs on that. But Steve, we did have you include one individual stock, and that is Sandstorm Gold. I know that you really appreciate having some positions in the royalty space, and this is a stock that you follow. It's also a stock that I have in my portfolio. Obviously, there's a longer term uptrend in Sandstorm Gold of higher lows, but what's the takeaway from the first chart, more of the long range chart back to 2016?
Yeah, I normally don't talk about individual stocks, but Sandstorm's really caught my attention here because I think it looks constructive in multiple timeframes. So if you zoom out to the longer term, like 10-year monthly candlestick chart, you see this massive triangle forming, and we're approaching the apex of that triangle probably later this year. And you typically get a sharp move as these triangle patterns resolve, and they tend to break in the direction of the prevailing trend. And like you said, the trend is up. That's the most likely outcome from a purely statistical perspective. Of course, it could break lower, but I think it's more likely to go higher. But then when you go to the shorter term weekly chart, it's hugging the right edge of this bullish arc pattern. And it's dipped below there a couple times, left some tails, but every time it comes, you know, it bounces right back up. So if you're someone who likes to buy pullbacks to support, I think Sandstorm is one that looks really good. And I especially like the the business model. I like this company. So this is one that looks really attractive to me. I am watching that 200-day moving average on the daily chart. It's still a little bit below that. So, you know, the more conservative approach would be to wait for a break above that 200-day.
Are you concerned at all, Steve, about the short-term moves that we've seen over the last about year and a half of this generally lower highs and at least one lower low?
Well, I mean, almost all the stocks look similar in that regard. So am I concerned personally? No, because if it broke lower, that doesn't really bother me because I've got a personal strategy and plan in place if that happens. So I'm not concerned about it. But you can make an if-then statement again. You know, if that recent low, if you go back to December of 2021, the low was $5.31. So if $5.31 were to fail and we made a new lower low, that would open up the door towards a more significant drop. But if that were to happen, you know, I've got a strategy of keeping cash available to scoop up stocks that are deeply discounted. I don't think that's likely to happen, but I've got a plan in place if it does.
Well, Steve, just to that point, I really like that you have a strategy around when you buy a position, what you're looking for in your target trade, you know, where you'd like to exit it. And in general, you have a strategy for your portfolio. And you just recently released a video to your subscribers about how you model your portfolio. And you made a great statement, and I'd love you to unpack this for investors, but that you see so many people get excited about gold or silver. They're new to the narrative, maybe. And then they jump right into the riskiest part of the sector, which is the drill plays that don't have any gold or silver or copper in the ground yet. And they don't really structure their portfolio in a way that thinks about risk. So I'd love you to just walk through how you deal with strategy and how you deal with structuring your portfolio just from a high level.
Yeah. If you ask the average newer investor, hey, what's your goal? And they'll say to maximize returns. And that sounds great. But really, our goal should be to maximize risk-adjusted returns. And that means you know, we want the most upside potential for the least amount of risk. And how you structure your portfolio is really the solution to that. And like you said, a lot of people, when they're brand new, just go all in on explorers and developers. And that's fine as long as you understand the risks associated with it. But I think a lot of people maybe don't. For me, I like about 20% of my overall portfolio in those explorers and developers. That's a healthy amount for me. That doesn't mean it's right for you, but these are questions you should really think about as you're building a portfolio and, you know, accumulating these stocks. Once you have a strategy, then you have a framework. And so after you have a strategy in place and a framework, you hear about a stock idea or you know, you see something on Twitter or hear an interview. And now you can say, hey, does this fit into my framework? And if it doesn't, you can discard the vast majority of ideas that come across your path and focus on the ones that fit into your plan.
Do you time the market at all in terms of bullish, bearish markets, or even during times like these where everything's moving down? Does the allocation of majors, developers, explorers change at all?
A little bit. So I look at ratios, and right now it's the junior silver miners that are the most undervalued. So that's really what I'm focusing on right now. But at the same time, I don't want that exposure of junior explorers and developers to get more than about 20% for me. So, but they've fallen more. So now that percentage of my overall portfolio is less. So I've got room to accumulate more to get it back up to 20%.
So in some sense, Steve, you're kind of looking at different ratios, but also different percentages of allocation within your portfolio. Obviously, if explorers and developers are only 20% of it, it seems like the lion's share of your investing is probably in the producers, in some of the royalty companies. And some investors would shy away from that and say, oh, you know, I want to have the big returns. But, you know, explain your thinking. Why do you have exposure to some of the producers and some of the royalty companies and even some of the ETFs?
Yeah, if I were to do it all again, just for me, this isn't right for everybody, but I would do about 50% in royalty and streaming plays, about 30% in mid-tier producers with exploration upside, and then about 20% in the explorers and developers. And that's just an amount that allows me to sleep well at night and, you know, endure these brutal pullbacks a little bit easier. You know, if I look at my overall portfolio, it's the royalty and streaming companies that are still green and some of the mid-tier producers, but most of those explorers and developers have just been obliterated. I mean, it doesn't bother me too much because I'm highly confident they're going to come back. But, you know, I wouldn't want to be all in on those because I'd be looking at just a sea of red across my whole portfolio right now.
How much cash are you building up right now, Steve? Because in all fairness, it's a good time to have cash as everything's dropping.
Yep. Speaking of strategy, so my personal strategy, again, not right for everyone, but I keep 10% of my account in a separate dedicated trading account. And whenever I trade, I always use a tight stop loss. So in the event that we get these kind of sell-offs, stop losses are triggered. And then if the sell-off continues, I've got 10% of my portfolio in cash that I can deploy to scoop up bargains. So I haven't done that yet, but if silver breaks to new lows and we go sub $20 silver, that's where I'm going to personally take some of my trading capital of that 10% and redeploy it into the longer term positions.
Okay. Steve, always great chatting with you. Thanks for breaking down some of these charts. No denying that a lot of stocks still are in a general downtrend, but you have outlined some more bullish outlooks for some of these. But again, as you just said, use those stop losses. It can save you on some further losses, which I think we're all experiencing. Steve, thanks for your time. Hope you have a great weekend.
You too. Thanks, guys.